the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. The best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site, covering the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. And I'm going to continue plugging that show because especially this is the time of year to get caught up on all the draft stuff, Seth. We're on the cusp of doing draft stuff, but how is everything over on your side of the podcast? And it's officially off season work time, right?
Yeah, it's been crazy. We finished offensive line, quarterbacks, running backs on the offensive side, and then we've done corners and safeties in the safety class. Thank God the Cardinals don't need a safety because this is not the year to need one. But for a team in desperate need of a corner, there's a show we recorded last week where we discussed the cornerback prospects on our Patreon. You know, $2 a month, you can listen to all those and the back catalog where you hear names mentioned in June and July about guys like Keanu Benton and others that are now getting, you know, top 60, top 50 buzz and things like that. It makes it a little more fun to go back and listen to those and be like, oh man, good to see this guy like lived up to the hype I put on him early in the season, because you never know with these guys. But you know, it's been fun. This is a great time of year, and we're winding down, man. We're recording on a Tuesday night, April 11th, and you know, in 2 days, so this will be out the 12th, and then on the 13th, we're just 2 weeks away from the draft. So it's just, I mean, it's all coming to a head so fast, and you know, getting ready to really be informal in the sense of us learning about this Arizona Cardinals staff and what they are looking for, particularly in the draft, right?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And because there's so much uncertainty about where they're going to pick, are they going to trade? Yeah. And in this show, we're going to touch on a few things and then kind of, and over the next couple of weeks. As Seth and I do a couple of shows each week, we'll put together in many years. So we would have like extended shows where we talk about the offensive prospects and then we talk about the defensive prospects. We're going to slow those down just a bit today. Tonight, we'll talk about needs and scenarios and start to go through different position groups. The two position groups we're going to deal with in this show are pass rushers and interior defensive linemen. Later in the week, we will start going through the other positions. Basically, we'll have two shows this week, two shows next week, where we cover the different positions, players to know, top of the draft, middle of the draft, end of the draft, that type of thing. And then on draft week, we will do our mock draft on Tuesday. While it would be nice to do a draft reaction, so I know Seth and Justin will be doing do you guys record live? So you get kind of the reactions while the draft is happening or after the first round. But I know I will be way too busy from Thursday, Friday, and Saturday to do any recording. I might be able to do some initial reactions, but we'll have to push off like a show for us until the week after, because both you and I will be riding our fannies off over that weekend.
Well, and especially with, I mean, and we'll talk about this the next 2 weeks, but I wrote about it today. Mel Kiper came out with his, you know, what was it? 4.0. I can't even keep up anymore, but his newest mock draft again on April 11th. So about, you know, 16 days before the actual draft. And he had the Cardinals trading down from 3 to 11. And you and I have written ad nauseum. It just feels like at this point, there's less of a chance the Cardinals pick at 3 than they then they trade the pick, right? Like, it just feels like this pick is getting traded, barring just everything falling apart. And that makes it even harder. And we're not complaining because this is actually the fun part of our job. But, like, that makes it even harder because now you're talking about the trade itself when it comes down, right? We got to get on that immediately. Like, we'll have it prepped, but because there's really no, like, are they going down just to 4? Are they going to get down to 5? Are they going to go to 7? Are they going to go to 11? Are they going to trade back with the Washington Commander? Like, how far? And so, like, all of a sudden, like, you can have the framework of, like, the Cardinals have traded the 3rd overall pick too, and then you can't fill out anything else because you have no idea where it's going. And that's what makes it fun. But like you said, that's what makes it a busy night for us. You know, because instead of just writing about, oh, they took Will Anderson at 3. Oh, they pick at 34. Here are the best prospects available still at 34, right? Now all of a sudden you're writing about 11, and then you're 34 and 41. And then here's how the trade, you know, lines up with similar trades over the past decade. You know, there's all the, oh, and then this is who they drafted on top of that, right? So, like, all of that is going to be a lot of fun for us, but it is a busy, busy night. Jay and I will have a first round reaction, barring anything coming up. You know, he's in school right now, so it's been a lot of, you know, going when we can type stuff. But that's the plan, and then, you know, kind of go from there.
This is let's start with that then. Let's discuss briefly, nothing major. Nothing real in depth, but we have two main discussions that I want to react to so that we just, yeah. So we can at least acknowledge some stuff that has come up in the news. And one is, this is the fun stuff. Phase one, the off-season program for the Cardinals, officially began on Tuesday with workouts. You had guys in the building. You had reporters taking photographers taking pictures. Guys doing some drills, working in the weight room. Jonathan Gannon talked. I haven't been able to hear. I haven't found the audio of that yet, so I will yet listen to that. Zach Ertz talk. James Conner talk. Apparently, James Conner's as strong as ever. He's curling the weight that Jonathan Gannon weighs. And Kyler Murray's in the building. Like, this is the time of year where it should be just all happy, like, all propaganda. It should just be all propaganda. And what's awesome is that aside from DeAndre Hopkins, this the distraction of DeAndre Hopkins right now, it really is. We're not hearing about the nonsense about Kyler Murray this, Kyler Murray that. He's in the building. There's a million reasons why he should do it, and I don't mean million because he gets $1 million for participating in off-season workouts. You know, there's no contract dispute. He's rehabbing an injury in-house. And of course, he has $1 million in a workout bonus that's tied into it. So if anyone doubted that he was going to be here in this offseason, y'all were crazy. That was last year's absence was a strategic one that we see from players time after time after time after time after time, including quarterbacks, when they are in a contract dispute. So it was a one-time thing. That got resolved. He's here.
Wait,
and working.
You mean he doesn't hate the organization?
Maybe he hates the organization. I don't know about that, but
well, I mean, to be fair, apparently everybody hates the organization at this point, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's like you said, it's great. I thought a lot of the questions and a lot of the answers coming from the media was pertinent today. They asked a lot of questions, obviously, about the NFLPA thing, because this is the first time on the record they could talk to players, right? Like, this is the first time they were able to have these discussions and you know, figure out kind of the player side of things. And that makes sense. I mean, obviously, there's been no interactions with the players. I mean, players are advised, as Jess and I can attest, most of the time, that they're either to strategically decline interviews or they are asked to keep to certain topics, right?
Yeah, so like when, yeah.
When you interviewed Kelvin Beachum, you know, they're probably going to tell you ahead of time, like, hey, please don't bring up the NFLPA thing. It's just not something he's
and
talk
even
about.
And I when I brought it up to him, he was real frank. He said, you know, while that's nice, that's not the important thing. Like money, the dollars and cents matter. If you pay them, if you pay them the right amount, they'll go work out well. They'll go by themselves. You know, it's adequate. Like that's the thing, is that it was adequate. We talked about on is that NFLPA thing was completely strategic, and it was to pressure teams. It was
like
pure pressure.
Cardinals, yes. Yeah, like the Cardinals who have
to improve their working condition. So while they had and the F minuses, I will say that was proof of just that was propaganda on the other end. That really was. It was pushing a narrative when you do something and say an F. We know that there's no such thing as an F minus. Failing is failing. You can't do worse than failing. So that sort of hyperbole, that ridiculous F minus, was pushing a narrative, which and good for them. The NFLPA, that's what labor unions do. They and because the Players Association is a popular players union, it's a popular labor union because it has NFL players, they're using their platform wisely because they're not going to change. They're not going to change the dollars and cents the players can, but they can push organizations and shame them into improving their facilities.
Right. And as they should. I mean, that's part of their job and part of their agenda is their, you know, their employees, so to speak, you know, and they're representing their union in that way. So, you know, it all makes sense. And it was good to hear Ertz talk about, you know, they're already making strides in that direction, you know, and maybe Ertz is just a great guy and maybe he's lying, but I mean, what benefit is it to him, for him to lie? Like he's got his guaranteed money. Like he doesn't have to lie. So that's what I said. Like it's, you know, I thought it was a nice overall, you know, experience. Like you said, like you got to see some of the propaganda, you got to see some of the excitement of things, but in reality, it was just nice to see that there are some different things going on and we're seeing, you know, this team go together. And one of the things that I thought was important and, you know, again, Ertz talked a lot and I thought it was really good. But he said something, I want to make sure I get the quote right. And now I can't find it. Hold on. Let me see if I can search for it. But he basically talked obviously about the situation, you know, with regards to breakfast, right? When I came in, breakfast was ready, right? So that was one of the things that the Cardinals were unfortunately the only organization that charged players for their food. Whatever. Again, you know, it is what it is. Right, wrong, or the other, that's what was going on. But this was big to me, and I think it says something, and this is, I think, where people were struggling with, like, the trainer getting fired or, you know, and then Buddy Morris getting reassigned, right? Tight end Zekert says that every person that Gannon has brought in from the staff has a shared vision of putting the players first. And it wasn't that those guys didn't put the players first. It wasn't that they weren't putting the players in a position to be successful or putting the best foot forward for the players or things like that. But their vision or their goals may not have all aligned with what the Cardinals as a whole were in that moment. And yeah. Now it's as corny as it sounds. Everybody's kind of on the same page, right?
Yeah, that's been a major, major thing for Gannon, is trying to get a consistent message. And not that Cliff wasn't doing the same thing, but also what Cliff was very open to was dialogue. So he approached things differently. Gannon's coming in, he's got, this is what I want, and so I'm bringing in guys that have the same vision, and if you're not going to be the vision that have that same vision, and while there's going to be debate, ultimately it is his show. And I don't know if you guys are catching on to this, is that this is Gannon is making this his show, but saying that it's the player's show. But he really is setting it up so that it all comes on him, while Cliff had all of these different coaches, and he's like, I trust these guys, and so I will allow, we will adapt, and we'll do this and that. And maybe that was part of the downfall of that, because he wanted to let players, again, just people be professional. He wanted people to be professional and to do their job well.
And you and I have talked about this, and we're both, you know, in professions. I work in the medical field. You work in education. Like, we're both professionals in very, you know, respected professions. And the reality is, there tends to be a line, if you will. And the line that tends to get crossed is how people look at themselves or view themselves in these situations. And one of the things that you see a little too often is that some people value their own worth more than the collective. And they say, well, you know, I, me, this and that. And what, as cheesy as it is and as cheesy as it sounds, Gannon's biggest thing is getting this to be a we situation.
Yes, that is the one thing that is. But and I think the players love hearing it, is because Gannon, at least so far, hasn't had anything. Like, he's all about players first, players first, players first. Team first, but this is all about better for the players. I don't know if we had a chance to talk about it in our last show, but the fact that, and let's praise the organization for this. The strength, the Cardinals invested heavily into.
Yeah, that came out right after our show. I think it came out the Wednesday after our show.
Let's look. Going back forever, the Cardinals have had a strength and conditioning coach and an assistant. And then with Bruce Arians, they also had Roger King. So there were only three guys on their entire staff in the organization that were about the strength and conditioning, injuries and all that. And you have the medical side of the trainers. But the Cardinals changed things up. This is Jonathan Gannon. And so they went from having simply Buddy Morris and Mark Naylor. That's it. They were in charge of that. And then Buddy would report to Cliff. Now they have, and this is so, let's be clear, Buddy was not promoted. He was given a different title and a different role. But while he gets the senior reconditioning coordinator, where he was the number one in charge of strength and conditioning and spoke directly to the head coach, like, he answered to Cliff. That was his job. Now he works under Evan Marcus, the new strength and conditioning coach, under his direction, who is underneath the director of football performance, Shea Thompson, who is the guy that answers to Jonathan Gannon. But they now have a staff of eight. They have a director of football performance. They have a new strength and conditioning coach. Buddy will be dealing more with coming back from it, reconditioning. That's basically rehab and coming back to football activities. Then you've got, you know, Mark Naylor returns, you've got two other assistants, and then you've got an assistant who is also over sports science. You have an entire new department that, so whether this was an answer to the NFLPA report card or simply something that Jonathan Gannon knew that he wanted to have improved, they are showing to the players, hey, this part of football matters a lot. And that's a big change, because, you know, as far as I can remember, the Cardinals, and with Bruce Arians, they had one extra guy, Roger Kingdom, who was a speed guy. He was the speed coach. Then you had Buddy, and then before that, the guy that was before Buddy, and then they had an assistant. That's it. So 2-3. That was it when it came to strength and conditioning. Now you have an entire team of guys that are not only over strength and conditioning, they also have a part on reconditioning and rehabbing, and you also have sports science.
That's what I was going to say. I think the biggest one is the sports science, because one of the things that they got negatively graded on in their, I think it was a B minus or B plus, which was one of their highest grades, right? In that NFLPA situation, was that things weren't individualized. And that is a heavy, heavy, heavy thing in sports science right now, is the individualization of workouts, diet plans, all of these things. And to see that not be something that the Cardinals were doing, when you consider that they were also, you know, charging for food, they were also not providing great food for people in that sense. You know, that was actually one of the complaints about the food, right? Was that it was just bad. All of that, you know, all of that makes sense that they would try to rehaul and redevelop and invest in bringing in guys that are going to change the product and the way things are approached in that sense.
Let's talk a little bit the other, I don't want to go delve too much into this because it deals with the whole allegations, everything, and that's Pro Football Talk acquired a communication from Ron Miniger, the former former COO. If you remember him from a few years ago, he worked with the team for 20 years, and then early 2019, not long after Steve Keim had his DUI arrest, Miniger also had a DUI. And ultimately, he resigned and left the team. Some things in a communication, basically leading up to his resignation, communication with owner Michael Bidwill, it was shared with Pro Football Talk, who then shared it online, confirms or corroborates some of what Terry McDonough is saying. Nothing about the cheating and the burner phones, this or that. But it does lend itself, it does give a second witness to Michael Bidwill's interactions with employees, which says that Bidwill, who used to be a smiley, happy guy, has developed into a miserable man who is unhappy with the state of the team, how things are going, for whatever reason. And Miniger said as such, basically said he's miserable and you bring it to work every day and everyone feels that misery. And if you look at the timeline of that, he communicated that at the end of 2019, which happened to be at the same, it was just months after, just a couple of months after Michael's father, Bill Bidwill, died. And so between that, the personal life stuff, and having two of his most guys, like Steve Keim and Ron Miniger, who had been with the organization for 20 years, to go out and publicly embarrass the franchise when Bidwill is the owner. On top of, one thing we've known since Bidwill took over, he wants to win. And they haven't been able to sustain success. They just haven't been able to, they haven't been able to be the Patriots. And I think that really, really, really gets under his craw a bit, and it's made him get more bitter. But while it does corroborate things, the one thing for me that it doesn't do, it doesn't give us any proof as to any sort of actual misconduct.
Yeah, and it's one of those situations for me where I think there's the reality that you had Keim, Miniger, Bidwill, and McDonough, who kind of were.
So McDonough, who was flying off the rails in his personal life, Keim.
But you had them, I mean, they were a group, and they were kind of boys, right? They enjoyed hanging out together. They enjoyed being able to go out and you know, like we said last week, you know, enjoy their timeout. Let's say that. And now all of a sudden, you've got Steve Keim who gets a DUI. Then a year later, Ron Miniker gets a DUI. And it's like, and again, we're not condoning anything. I want that to be 100% understood. But I do think that there is a reality where there was disappointment from Bidwell, right? That this was his executive crew, who are also seemingly a lot of his friends. And they let him down, right? In a situation where you were probably needing them more than ever, you know, as you went from the most successful 3-year stretch, I mean, hell, the most successful 5-year stretch in franchise history, to obviously the disaster of 2018. And now things are going down the wrong path in 2019. And then, you know, like you said, his dad passes away and these guys aren't holding it together on their end as well. It just becomes, I don't want to excuse it or say okay or anything like that. It just becomes almost understandable that the way Miniker described him would be how Bidwell behaved. And now taking it out on your subordinates and your employees and especially media folk like, you know, like we heard last week from the one gentleman whose name's escaping me right now. It just, you know, it's not acceptable, but it does start to paint the picture of what all was going on, right?
Right, and what Miniker also had in his communication does suggest that it does line up with McDonough said. And one of the things is that they had the employee survey in 2019 and that Bidwell shut it down. Bidwell shut it down after hearing some of the feedback that people are in fear, things that, blah, 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 all that. However, the Cardinals made it a point to say that it was after that that they changed things with the organization. They created the people division. They actually created a human resource, something they hadn't had in terms of that. And so it seems to me that maybe both sides are true, that Bidwell shut it down, but not because he didn't want to change things, but when he's hearing overwhelming that he's the problem, how much more do you think he wanted to hear? Changes did happen organizationally. So I it's hard to say that they completely ignored it. But while it lends itself that we have kind of confirmation, corroboration, that this employee survey, that they didn't lean into it, but rather he shut it down after a little bit. But that doesn't mean that change and improvements didn't come of it.
Right. And, you know, it's just one of those things. You just have to look at, and I think my biggest issue in all of this has continuously been the Cardinals' response through their outside PR department, which is taking extraordinary measures, it feels like, to take some pot shots at former employees. And that's where my issue comes in, because it's like, look, I'm not saying ignore it. I'm not saying, you know, don't respond to it, but like to attack McDonough and now Miniker feels it just feels like it's
they're trying too hard.
Right. Like they're trying to justify the behavior. And it's like, instead of that, why don't you just respond, say these out, you know, we disagree with these allegations and these are the reasons why, you know, but to attack McDonough and Miniger in, you know, back to back outside PR stuff is an interesting way to go about it. And kind of shows sometimes the overall delusion of what's going on, because it's like, instead of reading the room, you're trying to spin it like, I'm not a bad guy. Like, let me explain to you why. And it's like, no, you don't need to explain to anybody why you're not a bad guy. Just don't respond. Like, just stay out of, like, just stay out of the mud, so to speak.
Yeah. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sierra podcast, Best of our Cardinals Talk on the Web, we will delve into the draft. We are now officially at the draft portion of the podcast over the next couple of weeks. Let's discuss specifically the first round pick. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sierra Red. We're back on the Rise of Sierra podcast, Mr. of Cardinals Talk on the Web. The Cardinals have the third overall pick. We're going to use this segment to talk about who are the players, and specifically the top of the players we should and we like the Cardinals to consider, whether they pick third overall, whether they trade back. Who should we zero in on for the third pick? Who should we zero in on as possible selections if they trade back in round one? Is it safe to say, staying in number three, should we just say Will Anderson and call it done? That just kind of feels like that is the, like, if they were to pick, if they don't trade the pick, and they stay at number three and they drafted someone else, I think we all would be collectively, what the hell? Right?
Right. And, you know, I think that's the thing. I've said this on the podcast with Justin. I think it's one of those situations where I'm not sure that they want to draft Will Anderson. And what I mean by that is, I think that they have other guys that they prefer, but they also realize how good Will Anderson is and what kind of, you know, that would signal, so to speak, what probably send the wrong signal is probably the best way to say it. And so what they're doing is they're looking for that out, which is, hey, we traded down, you know, to
it's set. Like they want other scenarios more than they want just Will Anderson. They don't want Will Anderson and less depth. They think, I'm guessing, if we're going to take from what we know about Steve Keim from before, because we don't know about Austin Fortin drafts yet.
Right.
That perhaps Anderson is a touch high, is a significant enough, but not too far ahead on their draft board than guys like, say, Christian Gonzalez, Tyree Wilson, blah, 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 blah. And maybe perhaps that margin is not as great as we might think. And so the potential of having additional picks of guys that they have, you know, say 15 through 50 are similarly graded. They would rather have more of those guys with a top pick that is a little bit under Anderson, but they can address multiple needs and still get quality play.
Right. And, you know, one of those things is, I think that they, like you said, they want more picks, but, you know, sometimes you just take the best player and you walk away. So it'll be interesting to see where their comfort zone is. I think if I had to guess, their top three players that they'd like to take are Tyree Wilson, and then two corners that we'll discuss at another time. But, and so, like, that makes it interesting, right? Because obviously Will Anderson's the top guy in the draft, top non-quarterback. But, you know, Wilson's an interesting guy to look at. My biggest concern is you have a guy that wasn't overly productive in the Big 12.
He was analytically productive, but not statistically productive.
And then he is an outlier in terms of size, right? He's over 6'6", 270 pounds.
Ridiculous arm length.
Yeah, super long. You know, good strength. Didn't do any testing, which is always concerning to me.
But from what Daniel Jeremiah says, he was expected to, like, run and jump out of the stadium.
And so, like, I think his high-end comp is somebody that we are all a little familiar with, and that's Chandler Jones, you know, a guy that came in at 6'5", 266 pounds, same arm length type of thing. And again, Jones was like a 4.87 guy. I've read that Wilson was probably a high 4.7, low 4.8 guy. And he had good jumps, as Jess alluded to, you know, so he was, you know, he had great jumps for his size and speed. And so, and then a good, you know, near elite three cone, which is, you know, important in pass rushing. So those things all kind of worked out. And interestingly enough, Jones benched 22 times. Wilson was 23. So again, like a lot of similarities in that. And I don't think that's a bad, I mean, obviously that would be fantastic if he got to that level. I think that's, you know, something that Jess and I always talk about. Justin and I always talk about is understanding that that's a high end, right? Like that's obviously dream scenario, best case. Like you're talking a Hall of Fame level player. Like those are not realistic expectations. But let me throw a name at you that is not going to knock anybody's socks off. And I think this is where things get, you know, things get a little iffy, but I think a low end projection for him would be something like Dietrich Weiss. So a guy that's been in the NFL now for 6 seasons, took him about 3 years to become a starter for the New England Patriots. A little bit different. They took Weiss in the 4th round overall. You know, Kim's in at 6'5", 275, same type of arm length, 35 and 5/8. Again, 40 time, not important in this, but he had a great broad jump, like elite level broad jump, and then really, really good three cone and average vertical. So, and again, 22 reps on the bench. So right in line with that. You know, he had 7.5 sacks last year, has 24.5 in 6 seasons, like I said. Not great, but if that's your low end, you know, you're probably happy. Obviously, we don't project these guys as busts, so that big thing. But let me throw out one name that he could be like, and some, you know, somebody that was taken extremely high in the draft as well, that made a Pro Bowl, had 2 10-plus sack seasons, was pretty good, and that was Ezekiel Ansah, taken 5th overall. Came out, you know, 6'5", 275 out of BYU, correct?
Correct. A guy who hadn't played a lot of football, who had a lot of upside. Didn't, is Wilson in Wilson's same scenario? He didn't, he got into football late, didn't he?
He did. He's older. I think he's going to be, I want to double check, but I think he is going to be 24. Oh, he'll be 23 this year. He'll be 23 in May. So, you know, he's older. We talked about it, you know, not overly productive in college in terms of, you know, raw stats. So an interesting, you know, so you have that range of outcomes, right? You have Dietrich Weiss, just a solid defensive end.
Just, but slightly better than just a guy.
Right. A quality starter. Let's put it that way. Like a guy that you're always looking to upgrade, but like you're not going to lose games because, you know, then you have Ziggy Ansah, who was a high level producer for a couple seasons, but, you know, never really like sustained success. Cause remember, I mean, we're talking about through a 5-year, that his first 5-year window in Detroit, I mean, 44 sacks in five seasons. If you're getting nine sacks a season, that's fantastic.
It's not too bad at all.
That's really fantastic. And so, you know, that's what you have to look at. And that's one of the things that you have to understand. Like, if you're saying, and this is something that we're seeing more of right now, you know, if you're saying Will Anderson is not, you know, on the level of like Von Miller or Nick Bosa, right? Like, they're not, he's not that level. But like, could he be like a Khalil Mack level where you're talking about a guy who, you know, obviously he won a defensive player of the year, but like his career high in sacks was 15. Like, and then, you know, as he got older, it tailed off. Like, he's been a great player, but, you know, would you put him up there with Von Miller? Like, you know, who, you know, let me see here.
Miller's production is ridiculous, and he lost most of a season with an ACL tear.
Right. And so, you know, you look at it like, you know, Von Miller versus Khalil Mack, like, those are the decisions that face the Cardinals.
Yeah. So would you say that the dream scenario for them would be to pick up a pick and get Wilson? And interesting to note is you use the Ziggy Ansah comp is to remember who is the assistant general manager for the Cardinals. That would be Dave Sears, who was the director of college scouting since 2017 for the Lions, who drafted Ansah, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, you look at it, you know, you've got a guy in Wilson. Like, if you move back, I don't know if you can move. Here's the interesting thing. The rumors are you probably can't move past Seattle because Seattle allegedly likes Tyree Wilson.
And that'd be interesting. But even though in Kuiper's draft on Tuesday, he had Wilson fallen all the way to number 11.
And I think that would be ideal, right?
That would be, if you had to pick, kind of what Kuiper has is almost a perfect draft, except they don't get any offensive linemen in round one or two. You end up with Tyree Wilson, you end up with Quentin Johnston. So you get a high-end receiver, and then you get a kind of a stud interior player in Madison Smith.
And the nice thing is in that scenario, because I went through it, there's only two picks, and then you can draft Luke Whippler, who was available still. So,
yeah.
You know, that would be, I mean, if you ended up, if your first four picks and you added a first round pick in 24 and 25, you know,
and the thing that's really fun about the Titans pick for 2024, they could be terrible.
Right. They could be terrible in 24 and 25 if they're trading up and they miss on this quarterback, right?
Right.
Especially since they're trying to get rid of Derrick Henry too.
So, yeah. So, aside from the two guys, Will Anderson, we're going to assume that staying at three, Will Anderson's the guy. Tyree Wilson is a guy of interest. I have to figure that there's two cornerbacks that are kind of the top of the list. Would that be Christian Gonzalez and Devon Witherspoon?
Yeah, and so
what Gonzalez, about Joey Porter?
So, I don't think Porter would be a guy they would take in the top, let's say 11.
Okay.
Right. So like Gonzalez is a super freak of nature. You know,
so if this were the previous regime, you'd know he is that guy. They love Pacific Northwest, super athletic guys. You know that with the Keim front office, Gonzalez is a lock there. Witherspoon's interesting because of the tape that he has as well.
Right. And Witherspoon's interesting because he's a guy that is incredibly physical. You know, he plays to and through the ball. He tested as an adequate enough athlete. You know, he's not an elite athlete by any means, where Gonzalez is like, again, a super freak.
Like Marco Wilson plus tape.
Right. And so, you know, you look at Gonzalez, like you're talking about a guy that comps well to, you know, like Patrick Surtain, who's been an all pro. You know, he comps well There was another guy that Justin and I brought up. Now it's escaping my head, but like, there's a lot of like high end comps that look good for Christian Gonzalez. You know, and then Witherspoon is a guy, again, not a bad player in his own right. I think Justin and I had him as our corner four in this draft. You know, he's a guy that I think
analytics love him.
Yeah. I think the high end production in this year is what really set people off, because he did not have a great first two seasons, right? Like, his first couple of seasons at Illinois were not what you would call like elite. Like, you wouldn't look at him and be like, oh, this is a guy that's going to go top 10. But I think the fact that he is so physical, he is kind of the kind of guy that, you know, Monty or Jonathan Gannon will revel in having a guy that's that physical. The hard part is that, and Justin and I talked about this on the Patreon. So I recommend that, because we had a really long conversation about this, because Witherspoon, one of the crazy things about Witherspoon is you actually get concerned about his physicality because of how slight he is, right? Listed at 5'11", 180. He is not a guy that's, you know, but he's a guy that loves to bring the thunder, that loves to come up and hit, you know. And
the Cardinals struck gold with Buda Baker.
Right.
Can you strike gold again with the same sort of mentality with the big, strong body?
Right. And so it's interesting, like I was talking about, you look at his, you know, his completion percentage in 2020s, almost 70%, gave up 4 touchdowns. In 2021, he 59%. So a nice drop. And that's what you want to see, right? That's what we always talk about, you know, in terms of production, not like outlier seasons. And 1 touchdowns, no interceptions. And then this year, 35% with 3 interceptions. You know, he's a guy that could struggle in his first season because he is overly physical. And so that's one of the things that, you know, you have to watch and I don't want to say be concerned with, because I think that's an overly, you know, big thing to care about. But, you know, it's one of those things that you do worry about, is that he is going to be a guy that is overly physical, that gets called for a lot of penalties early in his career. I think he's going to be a nice player. I think, you know, this season really, you know, put him on the radar as being a potential, you know, breakout type of guy. And I think, you know, when you look at it, he's a guy that would fit again, if they traded into that 7 to 11 range. If he was, you know, if he got there, I would prefer Gonzalez, but I wouldn't hate Witherspoon there. Again, another guy that'll turn 23 this year, just to like understand the slight difference. And, you know, you're talking Gonzalez is younger, bigger, more athletic, you know, but you look at it, like we said, good name, good guy to see.
Other positions of note. I'm guessing Jalen Carter's probably going to be in the mix if you get closer to 11, if he's on the board.
I honestly, like, I have no feel for Carter. It almost feels like he's been guaranteed, and we have to understand his
well, he's not meeting with anyone outside of the top 10. Right.
That's what I was going to say. His agent is Drew Rosenhaus, so you have to take everything with all the salt, right? Like like, you just have to take it for what it is, cuz you don't know. You can never really tell. That being said, you've got a guy that is, you know, that again, like Wilson, lacks productivity on the field, but shows up as a disruptive player you know, I've said Justin and I's biggest concern has with him has always been the lack of snaps. Like, he's a guy that just didn't play a ton of snaps, and that's always a concern, man. Like, you know,
it's going to take time for him to be a big time player if he's used to playing no, like 40% of the snaps.
Right. And it's something we talked about with like Quinnen Williams. Right. And I, you know, Justin and I have talked about this with a lot of interior defensive linemen. I think people overvalue them early in their career. And so you look at like Quinnen Williams, right? So he was drafted number 3 overall after Kyler and Bosa, and took him 4 years to really become an impact, big time impact defensive player. And this was the first year that he played, you know, he played 690 snaps this year, 65%. That's career high. And so like Carter was not as productive. I don't think he's the same athletically. And so you still have a little more projection to do because we don't have testing numbers. We don't have anything like that. But, you know, you look at it like it's crazy, man. 287 snaps in 2020, 396 snaps in 2021, and 392 snaps in 2022. Now you go to Quinnen Williams, just so we can understand. So 392 or 396 last year in 2021 was the most snaps Carter played in his career. As a rookie, Quinnen Williams played 511 snaps. So we're asking for, you know, another 125, 30 snaps on top of that. So, you know, you average that out, 17 games as opposed to the 14 games that Carter played. So he's going to have to play, you know, additional snaps in each game and then play more snaps overall. It's just, it's not that it's not doable. It's just that he hasn't done it. And so that's, you know, the biggest thing. Like you look at like a Brian Breesy, right? Breesy in his freshman year played 430 snaps. And then coming off an ACL injury and then missing one or two games due to the loss of his sister, he played 330 snaps this year. And so it's just a different, you know, the rotation, the ability to stay fresh, all of that played a huge benefit to what Jalen Carter was able to do and why he was able to be very analytically productive. The question is, how fast does that translate?
If we look at other positions, possibilities in the top 11, we figure that the Cardinals will probably pick 3, 4, 7, 8, or 11. And in my opinion, I know they've had 6 players, teams call in.
I don't think they'll trade back with Washington. I just can't see that. That's a long.
It is. And I don't think that they would trade with the Seahawks, honestly.
I think
it's possible, but I doubt it.
I mean, obviously, there's no guarantees, even with a guarantee, but I think they'd have to be guaranteed that they were coming up to get a quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I think they would be like, look, only. And like, again, you can't guarantee. I guess you can guarantee that if you take the player and then trade him, but then like you run the risk of them being like, nope, not happening. Right. So, yeah. So it just, so, like it, you said, it
I think
it
it's
tough.
Too risky making the trade and a decision, you know, moving to 4 makes sense. I don't think Detroit's going to be in the mix, mate. They could, but I don't think so. So the Raiders, the Falcons, the Titans names keep coming up. And plus with the relationship with Austin Ford. So that I think that's kind of a sleeper pick. Daniel Jeremiah mentioned before. Kuiper had him in their mock today. And so you kind of think that. Does it feel like it's going to be a pass rusher, a cornerback, or an offensive lineman, and that's about it?
And, you know, honestly, trading back to 11, it takes you out. So, I mean, if we look at the consensus mock draft, and again, I recommend this site. They follow us. They're very nice people. They pay us nothing. And I'm not complaining. I'm just stating, like, we have no affiliation. But we use NFL Mock Draft Database religiously on our podcast because it just gives you kind of a consensus, right? Like, kind of an idea. And so you look at 11 and names that are off the board, you know, obviously quarterbacks, but Will Anderson, Jalen Carter, Tyree Wilson, Devin Witherspoon, Christian Gonzalez, Peter Skoronski, Lucas Van Ness. All right. So out of the guys we talked about, they're all gone. So all of a sudden it becomes, they've met with Paris Johnson for a top 30 visit. Okay.
Broderick, you know, Thomas.
Broderick Jones.
Jones, that is.
Yeah. Another, and Broderick Jones may be the most intriguing offensive line prospect in this draft. I mean, you're talking about a guy that is just a hyper, hyper athlete, untapped potential, could end up being, you know, a great fit. And we've talked about the re-signing of Kelvin, right? It doesn't preclude them from drafting a guy.
Right.
The name that would be great, and I don't know if he gets past 9 and the Chicago Bears. So then there becomes a question. All right, you trade back to 11. Would you trade up to 9 and give up, you know, a fourth or a, you know, fourth round pick to go get Peter Skoronski and get a guy that is potentially the next Zach Martin, right? And all of a sudden you've got kind of that elite guard in a run heavy offense. Like, you know, you've got your Joel Bitonio from what they had in Cleveland, right? You've got your Isaac Seumalo who they had in Philly. Like, you've got that type of guy. I think those are all fair questions. Everybody else, I mean, I think they could draft like Jackson Smith and Jigba. I think he would be a nice fit. But they have got to have traded DeAndre before they do that, right? Like, they can't draft Jackson Smith and Jigba and have
then Pop right still then on the then roster. Then that tanks any potential value. Then everyone knows, oh, you got to trade him. So yeah.
What about like a Kalijah Kansi? Is that, do you feel like that would be too high for him?
You know, I've seen projections for him anywhere from top 10 to second round, which is weird. But yeah, like, I think ultimately, you know, because he does physically comp to Aaron Donald, and like size, speed, athletic. He didn't have the high end production, but his production was still good. So Kansi still might be a top 15 guy that you wouldn't regret. And honestly, production wise, isn't he seem to be more of a sure thing than even Jalen Carter?
Yeah, definitely. And you look at him, you know, like you said, he's got some high end comps that are tough to overlook.
And especially, you know, like Justin likes to call the helmet comp.
Right.
Because Aaron Donald went to Pitt, you know, Kansi, Pitt. They're built kind of the same. Their athletic scores are similar. But Donald just, he plainly was more productive in college. And now, how did Kansi, was he at the Senior Bowl? I don't know that.
I don't think he was. No, because he was a junior.
Okay, so that's it. Because if I remember, Aaron Donald, he was a senior, wasn't he? Because Aaron Donald blew up everything. He was big at the Senior Bowl, big at the Combine, and it shouldn't have been at that point. It shouldn't have been any surprise how great he was, because he was the talk of the offseason. Kansi, you know, I you could sell me on that. Any other offensive? So, Broderick Jones, Pete Skoronski could be in that range. Paris Johnson. Darnell Wright.
You know, if you listen to our O-line podcast, Sully thinks he's going to be the best guy.
Well, he's like, you look at the games that he's had against the best pass rushers, and he just stonewalls them all.
Right. And we talked about it. Like, if your projected if your projected ability or like your projected career is Roger Saffold, that's a win. I know a lot of people want to have like higher, right? But like, if you're able to
moved Saffold to guard, he was great.
Yeah, and he had good years at tackle too. I mean, he was a guy that was productive. He was a 2-time Pro Bowler. He's, you know, 1-time second team All Pro. I think he was miscast as a left tackle and then had to move into guard, right? Correct. And so, like, you look at it from that perspective, and like you're saying, but here's the thing, man. Roger Saffold, and this is where people get, like, everything kind of junked up in their head. Roger Saffold has started 173 games in his career. If you draft a guy, and by the way, for the Rams, he started 111 games in 9 seasons. So, like, this is a guy, and he was injured one season, missed 11 games. This is a guy, like, if you get that type of production out of a pick, that is massive. Like, that's just massive. You know, it's high-end comp. It's one of those that you just don't really bring up because it's just not, like, it's just one of those that it's probably unattainable, but, like, he does have some similar comps to, like, Jason Peters. And obviously that's, you know.
Please don't do, like, yeah.
Right. That's just, like, a unicorn.
He's like, was like, he Jason Peters, Trent Williams kind of thing, but.
Right. And so you don't, again, that's just not realistic, not something you think about. But, like, if you get a Roger Saffold level player at pick 14 and he's a guy that starts, you know, 173 games for you, and I'm not, I mean, think about that. That's literally 10 years of games. Like, that would be huge. I think, you know, I think he's elite in a lot of ways, and I think, you know, I think he's a guy that you bring in and you don't worry about that right tackle position for a long, long time. And again, you know, that's something that they should look at. You know, when you look at it, names I would not want to see at 11. I mentioned Smith and Jigba only, obviously, if Hopkins is gone, right? Nolan Smith, love the player. At 34, I'm fine with it.
I keep seeing Nolan Smith top 10, but I'm like, dude, why?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a guy, you know, that elite-level athleticism. You know, the Hassan Reddick comps are real. But I think that overlooks the fact that Hassan Reddick put up massive, massive numbers.
Well, he played as an edge.
Right. Well, and Smith did as well, but he was kind of a run guy. And, you know, I want to say his highest year in sacks was like 4. I could be wrong. I'm double checked. 4.5. So I was right. You know, and Reddick was a guy, you know, he went from 1 to 2 to 5 to 9.5, right? Like, this is a guy, and 22.5 tackles for loss. Like, I like Smith. I think he's a good player. I just wouldn't, like I said, 11. Like, Smith's career high tackles for loss is 8. It's just, it's not something I would do there. I mentioned Joey Porter Jr. 11 is just too high. He's a guy that a little, I mean, his high end comp's great, right? Richard Sherman, but Richard Sherman went in the 5th round for a reason.
Right. Right? Although, like, isn't Porter a much, like, aside from, like, the side, like, the, but speed and length.
Yeah,
he's athletic Richard Sherman, right?
Yeah, his high-end comp for me came out to, oh, goodness, who's the guy that everybody thought the Cardinals was going to sign from Philly?
James
Bradbury.
Oh, Bradbury, yeah.
Yeah, James Bradbury, who, you know, 6'1", 211, 4'5", 40, which is right around, Porter was like a 4'4", 4'8", I can't remember. Good jumps, but big physical corner. That's kind of, you know, what Porter profiles as well. You know, I think that would be interesting. But again, Bradbury went in the third round. You know, you're talking about Carter at 11, or Porter, excuse me, at 11. I wouldn't mess with Miles Murphy. We mentioned Kancey. I like Kancey. You know, I wouldn't mess with Miles Murphy. Realistically, that's probably like all the names that you might see if they go down to 11. Things get off the rails if they go down to 16, or even I've seen somebody mention the Vikings. By the way, if they traded down to 23, wouldn't the Vikings have to give them like every pick this year? And
probably
like,
it's crazy talk.
And they don't have a second round pick.
Yeah, that wouldn't be that would be absurd. Like, yeah, no, that would remind me too much of
the Terrell Suggs, Calvin.
Yes. Where you do Calvin Pace and Brian Johnson. Please don't do that.
Well, and the crazy thing is this, like, okay. And again, like, I don't think it's gonna happen, but you trade down to 23. All right. So you get 23 and 87 this year. So then you get their 1 and 2 next year. And then you have to get their 1 in 25. Like, you would have to.
Right. You'd absolutely. Absolutely. There's no way around that.
Because they don't have a 2 this year. So like, it's tough, man. It's tough to see that happening. But if they did go down to 23, then all bets are off, because like, one,
you can just
hard
pick anybody, whatever.
Right. Well, and it's just like we said, it's hard to project that far down. All of a sudden you're like, oh, is John Michael Schmitz, you know, on the table, right? Because okay, well, you may not see, you know, you may not even see like Brian Breesy or those guys available. So like, you know, who's on the table at that point? So yeah, it's just a matter of how far they trade down. But I think you mentioned, you know, the names that are intriguing. If they get to 11, I think that they're really hoping that Christian Gonzalez gets to 11. That's a tough one to do. That is, but they have, like I said, they have some really good options. You know, Lucas Van Ness is a player we didn't even really talk about. Has a comp to a guy you and I love, Preston Smith.
Yes, Preston Smith, who should have always been the Cardinal.
And, you know, and then you've got, you know, you mentioned it, Broderick Jones, great tackle prospect, really intriguing. Darnell Wright, Kalijah Kancey, all those guys, you know, at 11 could be in play, and makes it, you know, intriguing. But I really think that they want to stay in the range where they can end up with Tyree Wilson, Devin Weatherspoon, or Christian Gonzalez if they move back. Which, like you said, that basically is 4, 6, 7.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. Let's start talking about position groups. First up, the pass rush. We've already talked about a couple. Who are other guys to know later on the draft? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, best of our Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the edge defenders, the pass rushers in the draft. Okay, we've already talked about Will Anderson. We talked about Tyree Wilson and even a little bit about Nolan Smith. Who are the guys in round two and then beyond to know? I know in my network mock draft, because I traded back, I went corner round one. A guy that came up for me was Keon White. Thinking about, like, we know the Cardinals like Tyree Wilson. And so I was looking at a guy that physically kind of has the same sort of big, long, has some positional versatility, kind of like Cameron Thomas. Long arms, some production. Who are some guys in the round two range? Is Keon White one of those guys? And who are other guys who are worth a look in round two? And then some guys that are worth throwing your names out there later on in the draft.
Yeah, I think White's a really good name to know, because you mentioned it. You know, he's more in that mold with like Tyree Wilson, but, you know, obviously a day two type of guy. He has some similar like ability to like a Stephon Tuitt, remember, who was a really nice player for the Steelers forever, right? I don't remember how many.
And then disappeared, you know, with some ailment.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, you're talking about a guy that, you know, again, not huge numbers, but average 5-6 sacks a season. That's kind of what you're looking for. You know, he, especially on day two, right? Like, everybody wants a 12 to 15 sack a year guy. Well, those are hard to find. That's why they're, you know, that's why it's so difficult. So, yeah, White's a guy that I like. on day two, I think he could be a fit in their base defense, especially with what they're looking to do from a physicality standpoint, right? Like, you're talking about a guy who improved every season, really good against the run, getting better as a pass rusher as he's learning more. I believe he started at Old Dominion as a tight end. So we're not talking about a guy that was, you know, forever a pass rusher, right? Like, a guy that is still learning and still growing as a player in that sense. Those are always good things to me. I like White if you could get him at 34. Will McDonald, a slightly undersized guy, allegedly was really, really sick, had like a 103 fever, you know, and then went out sub 6'4", sub 240, good wingspan, good arm length, had a good vert and a great broad jump, didn't run, obviously makes sense. Why he didn't, obviously being sick, he projects athletically similar to like an Arnold Ebiketie, who we liked coming out last year, right? And I think went in the second round, did he not? If I remember correctly, I could be wrong about that. Or like a Drake Jackson, who went in the second round to the 49ers, you know, a nice player, a good fit. But he's one of those guys that's more in the Hassan Reddick role, right? So, like, are they looking for those guys, or are they, and I don't mean this in this way, but are they trying to avoid them, right? Like, are they like, hey, we've got Myjai Sanders, and Myjai Sanders isn't a reason you don't draft Will Anderson, but like, if you're like, oh, it's okay, we have this guy, that's a guy, you know, that could be why. The big guy out of Northwestern, out of Tawami Abadori, he's a really interesting one because he's such an athletic freak of nature, but like, where does he fit? We've talked about him. He's similar to the guy, Adalius Thomas, Patriots had. The question
becomes, an old name.
Right, it really is. You know, but he came in, you know, he was kind of utilized in the same way, kind of all over the place. Is he a guy that, you know, that the Cardinals would be, and I don't want this to sound negative when I say it, but like, smart enough to use, you know what I'm saying? Like, would they be able to get the most, because he's not a true interior guy. While he has elite athleticism, he didn't work a ton on the edge. So like, are they comfortable, you know, moving him around and putting him in a spot to be successful? A name that I'm confused why it's not getting more love is Isaiah Foskey out of Notre Dame. You know, it's always really interesting when guys are long-term starters, highly productive at big places, and kind of just, I don't want to say get ignored, but like, don't get a ton of love. I mean, you look at Foskey, 4.5 sacks his sophomore year, 10 sacks junior year, 10.5 sacks this year as a senior. Athletically, you know, he profiles out similar to like Marcus Davenport when he was coming out of UTSA and was a first round pick. I mean, I'm just really surprised that he's not getting more love, because I think he'd be a nice fit as a base defensive end for a team like the Cardinals, and just what he brings. It's kind of weird that he's, you know, not even really talked about or mentioned among this group.
A player that production wise that I'm super intrigued about, and I won't, but if you Tuli Tuipulotu out of USC, his production came out of nowhere, but like, they had him listed. He leaned down this last year, didn't he? He's kind of like what Cameron Thomas. He was playing interior and then leaned down like 25 pounds, and then 13.5 sacks, 22 tackles for loss, weighing in at about 260.
Yeah, and he came in. He's really oddly built because he's 6'3", sub 6'4", 6'3 and a quarter, 266 pounds, but we've been talking about the guy's arm lengths, right? And he's got like baby arms, 32 and a quarter inch okay. arms. And so that's what the question becomes with him is like, where does he line up? Because as you said, like he was, I don't want to say just guy, like he was a good player. But yeah, like where does he fit? You know, ironically, that's like one of his top comps is Cam Thomas. You know, and so that'll be interesting to see. Did he test at USC? I didn't really notice if he did or not. At their pro day. I don't
because he did.
Yeah, he did test. Let's see. He got NFL bloodlines, which is also good, right? People like that. But yeah, I mean, he's an interesting prospect. Like that'll be the big thing for him.
Is he like, more round three?
I would assume he's going to go in round three.
So kind of like Cam Thomas, right?
Right. Yeah. Because there's just too many unknowns with him. You know, another name that's really intriguing is that doesn't get talked about a ton, but is a guy that I wonder, you know, as the process goes on, if people are going to look back and kind of wonder what they were missing or, you know, why they didn't like it, is a guy from Louisville, Yaya Diaby. He came in at 6'3", over 260 pounds. He ran a 4.5 40, had a 37-inch vert and a 120-inch broad jump. Like really, really good numbers. Tested similar to like Boy Mafi, who came out last year, right, out of Michigan that a lot of people liked. Or, sorry, Minnesota. You know, and then, you know, again, tested similar to like Josh Pascal, who I believe the Lions took in the second round, if I remember right. So Diaby's a guy that I've seen like projected in the fourth round, and like his high-end profile is something like Robert Quinn. And so you look at it, like, is this a guy you can take on early day three and really start to, you know, get a guy on day three that's really interesting. The 263 is what's impressive because they listed him at 255, you know. And like I said, the big thing with these guys is you want to just see them grow. He went from 3 tackles for loss, 1.5 sacks last year to 14 and 9 this year. Good. And that's why I said if you can get him in the fourth round, you know, that would be interesting. And then, you know, defensive lineman. Would you say that's the biggest need on this team right now?
Arguably. So it's coming next on our podcast, the best of Cardinals talk. Let's talk about the interior defenders. Who are the guys to know? That's coming next on Recipe Red. We're back on the Recipe Red podcast, best of Cardinals talk of the web. We've talked about Jalen Carter. We talked about Kalijah Kancey. But in a little bit about Brian Breesy. Defensive linemen, defensive tackles, the guys who can replace J.J. Watt, Zach Allen, those guys. Who are the guys to know kind of day two and beyond?
You know, we mentioned him earlier, Mazi Smith. Dude is just a freak. There's videos. He didn't do anything at the combine other than bench, but there are videos of him working out at Michigan, and you're just like, this dude's not human. Like, this is a guy that really projects to be a very solid interior defender. You know, on day two, if the Cardinals go offensive line or corner, or shoot, even if they went edge and they kind of semi-doubled down with a young guy and Smith as an interior defensive lineman, you're not going to see me bat an eye because this is a guy that has the chance to be special with what he brings. I'm really intrigued to see where he goes, because I've seen him projected top 20. I've seen him projected in the 40s. I do think we have to mention that there was a off the field incident that I think it was illegal weapons possession that was kind of taken care of, basically. Like, I don't know what all came out of it. So that could be the big, you know, red flag, if you will. But yeah, he's a guy, Mazi Smith.
He had a felony weapons charge.
Okay. And it was, but it was,
and he pled guilty to a misdemeanor charge.
That's what it was. They pled it down. Okay. So, I mean, what did Deion Sanders say the other day? I mean, I'm not going to repeat it, but, you know, so you look at it, he's just this dude is a freaking monster. You know, you can line him up interior and kind of just go with it. I think he's going to be fantastic. After Smith, one of my favorite guys, and I've talked about him literally since the beginning of the season, Keanu Benton out of Wisconsin. Again, this guy, I think, really surprised a lot of people with his ability. Coming into the season or going through the season, just under 6'4", 309 pounds. But this dude had an elite broad jump and an elite three cone. And it shows in his playing style and the way he moves. You know, I think he's a guy you can get on day two, potentially even at like a 63, 64, whenever their next pick is. I always forget. Sorry. Their third round pick, whatever it is. And, you know, if he makes it there, and he could be a guy that comes in as a day one starter. That's the kind of ability he has and what he's able to do. You know, he, and again, he's a guy that lined up in the A gap, in the B gap. He's done a lot on the interior. He's got really, you know, he's a guy I think that would continue to improve as a pass rusher and get better. He had 6 sacks this year and just like kind of grow in that way. Another guy that I love that I don't think gets talked about enough, and I'm really intrigued on where the NFL sees him, because I don't know if he's a nose tackle only or what, but Jared Clark out of Coastal Carolina is a guy that I really, really like. He's a little undersized at 6'3 and 335 pounds. But this dude, he actually had an above average three cone at that size, which is insane. You remember Pot Roast?
Yes.
So, yeah, Pot Roast Knighton, similar style to that, or like who's the big guy with the, I think the Bengals now, but it might be the Texans. DJ Reader, the interior guy. He is with the Bengals. See,
he was with Houston and then went to Cincy.
Okay, yeah, and he's a guy, you know, again, similar type of style and play. Like, they're just big dudes in the middle of the field that they dare you to move them. I think he's more of like a fourth round guy, a guy that I've started to watch a little more of because he's getting a lot of love, is Gervin Dexter. Again, these guys are just so big this year, man. Like, Dexter came in at just a shade under 6'6 and 310 pounds. And then he ran a 4.88 40 and had a 31 inch vertical and a 110 inch broad, which are like over the 70th percentile for each. Like, he's just a big, big dude. I think he can, you know, I think he can play anywhere on the interior of the defensive line. And we talked about snaps. This is what I kind of was alluding to, right? This is a dude that played 682 snaps this year. That's like two seasons of plays for Jalen Carter. And I'm not saying this guy's as good as Jalen Carter in any way, shape, or form.
But you know, like, he can be on the field.
Right. You know that he's already been on the field that much. You know, and then there's a bunch of guys that are on day three that are really intriguing. Zach Pickens out of South Carolina. Mike Morris out of Michigan is a guy that I think with his just super bad athleticism, people have kind of written off, you know, because he came in at 6'5", 275, and he didn't really test well at all. But, you know, you look at it, he's got similar numbers to like a Michael Bennett coming out of Texas A&M. And again, you know, I want people to understand this when I say this, that's not a bad thing, but we also do have to remember that Bennett went under, I believe. Yeah, he did. Okay. So, you know, but he had, you know, he ended up being a really, really good player for a long time in the NFL. But yeah, I wouldn't give up on a guy like Mike Morris right now, but if you got him on day three, I think it would be a really good fit. And then one last guy, you know, a local guy, Nesta Jade Silvera, undersized, 6'1", but a good kind of sturdy base at 304. And a guy that I think can get snaps in the league as a rotational guy. I don't think he's a guy that's going to, you know, play every down or play a lot. But like, he's a guy that can be in a rotation and, you know, and guys like him, Moro Ojomo, you know, those guys on day three, like I mentioned, Zach Pickens, those type of guys on day three, that's what we've seen a lot of for the Cardinals, but now they got to get them that stay healthy, right? Or that can make plays. So those are the things that you can look at. But yeah, I think there's a lot, like the defensive interior. If the Cardinals didn't need corners and so badly, like this would be the year to double dip at a defensive interior and take like a Mazi Smith at 34 and then come back and grab like a Byron Young with that comp pick, you know, the kid, or like a Zach Pickens, you know,
who's the kid out of Oklahoma that you guys talked about athletically that would be a really fun, that you think productively athletically would be really good in the pros?
Jalen Redmond.
Yes. Jalen Redmond.
Jalen Redmond. Yeah. You mentioned it, you know, 6'2", 290, but he had 4'8". One had a 34.5-inch vert.
He's a perfect kind of defensive lineman, like you get with value late in the draft because of the athletic part to it.
Right, and you look at it like a great comp for him. And again, like names, people don't like when you just give out like guys that were just really good. They're like, wait, I want somebody that's great. But like a Mike Neal, do you remember Mike Neal?
Vaguely.
For the Packers.
Yeah, yes,
so,
yes.
Yeah, so like a guy like Mike Neal. Interestingly enough, we talked about Redmond in the same way. Is like Neal came out of Purdue at 294 and then slimmed down to play linebacker. So, you know, it'll be interesting because of how athletic he is, where teams will take a Redmond and what they'll expect of him. Another guy that, you know, and first round guy. So it makes it, I think he went in the first round. I could be wrong, but yeah, he did. Luis Castillo out of Northwestern. Again, just a really solid interior guy. But like the high end comps for Redmond are really, really good. It's just, you know, you would have liked to have seen a little bit more production for a guy that was that athletic coming out.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise of C-Red podcast, best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. This time was more like an hour and a half, kind of like our older shows. We'll be back again later in the week talking more positions. The next three shows, unless there's stuff to talk about, we'll delve into each position group. probably talking more defensive players coming up on the next show this week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rude. This is Rise Up Seaward Podcast. Thanks, as always, for listening.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.